Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Children and Women in Palestine. On behalf of the trustees of MEND, I would like to thank Professor Mary Kaldor and the Center for Global Governance and the LSE for hosting this event, and our panelists for traveling a considerable distance, and to welcome you. When I met Lucy Nusebe and saw some of the MEND programs in action, I knew I had to help. There are many groups involved in peace activism, but all too few with as impressive a range of on-the-ground programs which are actually gaining results. After several years of false starts, together with co-trustees Jonathan Benthel and Syed Ahmed, the dream of registering MEND in the UK as a charity has become a reality. We're hoping that with this launch and your help, we'll be able to contribute to MEND's work by providing greater awareness and much-needed funding for some of their amazing projects. Robin Keeley is no stranger to the realities of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. As the British Consul General, he was in Jerusalem when Clinton visited Gaza in 1998. And when an opportunity for peace in the region failed. And he was in Jerusalem when the Second Intifada started. Although his day-to-day reality did not change much, dodging a brick thrown by a female settler and rescuing visitors who were in the West Bank when the Intifada started were not, I imagine, originally part of his job description. MEND UK is really honoured that he can join us this evening, as we can think of no better person to chair the panel. Please enjoy the evening.
Well, thank you very much, Gillian. And can I also echo, second strongly what you just said, to thank the LSE for their kindness in hosting us tonight, and also to my colleagues on stage, those particularly who've travelled from Jerusalem, and to you all for being here with us tonight. This is normally a stage where I tell you about the fire regulations. I'm not actually sure what they are, but there are green signs there at the back and there and there, and one at the back there. I don't know where you're meant to assemble, but I suggest if it gets too heated tonight, those are the places to make for. Also, those of you who haven't yet switched off your mobile phones, I have. Please do so. Get someone to ring you. So tonight, there are about four main themes we want to explore together as a panel, and then with you. Talk about the current situation in Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza, and thus explain a bit why MEND's activities are so important. Some reflections of the cultural background in the world to campaigning by non-violent means and the issue of non-violence generally. Look at the origins of MEND, its goals, and how it tries to achieve them, including something about MEND's future plans, and of course how MEND is seen by those who participate in its programs. First, we'll listen to our four panel speakers, Jonathan Benthel, Hind Khoury, Lucy Nusebe, Dana Abdel-Fattah. We'll follow that with a short panel discussion, and then we'll throw the proceedings open to the floor for questions and answers. This should take about an hour and a half, and after that, you're all invited to a reception in the fifth floor senior common room upstairs, so that you can have a chance to talk to each other and, of course, above all, meet the panel members personally and ask them further questions. As Hind Khoury will no doubt tell us in a few minutes, the current situation in Palestine remains very difficult and very challenging, and you would need to be even a greater optimist than I'm accused of being to believe that all the troubles and disputes of that beautiful city and country will soon be solved. But the more unpromising the situation, the more important are the activities of organizations such as MEND, which, whether they work with Israelis or Palestinians, try to promote non-violent ways of dealing with the current political situation, and also to help to build healthy societies for the future, not ones that bear psychological scars, to try to ensure, in effect, that the next generation does not have to pay a psychological price for the failures of my generation. As Nelson Mandela once said to Bill Clinton, "If I couldn't forgive those who put me in Robben Island, I would spiritually still be a prisoner there." Those are moving and admirable sentiments, and I notice that Nelson Mandela has spoken here at LSE in the past. But those are not sentiments that are easy to imitate and replicate in practice. But if we don't try to do so, we will all suffer, whether as neighbours of a region that is currently seeing so much violence, or as citizens of a world which is still trying to come to terms with the implications of 9/11. I've just been in Lebanon, where I was carrying out a review of UNRWA, and there I heard from the UNICEF representative about a recent report about violence against and by children in Palestinian refugee camps. The reviewer, who herself had come from Kosovo, was deeply concerned by what she learned. Ironically, as I was sitting at home last week, considering what I might say tonight, the phone rang with the news that my 13-year-old son had broken his leg at school. That was unpleasant for him and worrying for us. But in a few weeks, inshallah, the plaster will be off and he'll be restored to health. But psychological injuries are not so easy to deal with. Tragically, if not treated early, they can leave permanent scars, damaging the child, its family, and society as a whole. So that is the kind of challenge that Lucy and her colleagues at MEND have set themselves, one to which they have risen in a most dedicated and professional way, as I and my wife were able to see it firsthand as the consulate worked with Lucy over 2 years in Jerusalem. So I personally have no hesitation in endorsing MEND's goals and activities, and I hope that tonight's meeting will help to further those goals by enabling you all to feel a little of what it is to be a child in Palestine today, and how those children can be helped to become healthy in mind as well as in body, so that they can contribute to building a free, democratic, open, and peaceful Palestine. In short, a state worthy of its people's struggle. So that's enough from me, but I'd like now to turn to our panelists. First of all, Hind Khoury. Hind, sitting here to my right, I've known since almost before I think I met your husband before I even went to Jerusalem, but I met you very soon after I was there in 1997. Hind has been Minister for Jerusalem Affairs since February 2005 in the 9th Palestinian Authority Cabinet. In the past, she has been Programme Advisor at the Norwegian Representative Office to the Palestinian Authority, with responsibilities for donor coordination and support to the PA reform process. She's also been head of Economic Development Unit at UNDP Jerusalem, and previous studies which she conducted include the economic development of Jerusalem and the Bethlehem region for development of tourism. Hind was originally from Bethlehem, and in the context of the Bethlehem 2000 celebrations was the head of event management for the organization running those celebrations, and is still a board member of a number of civil society institutions in Bethlehem and Jerusalem. She was educated in economics and corporate management and came yesterday from Jerusalem to be with us tonight. Hind, we share the mic.
Thank you very much, Robin, for this introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable guests, I'm very pleased to be here with you tonight and certainly very honored to be addressing this distinguished audience. This is a particularly interesting and important event for us in launching MEND UK. It's a signal that international civil society is getting really interested in the non-violent movement in the Palestinian Authority, and this kind of support is needed so that we don't feel we're alone. And it's particularly important to discuss women and children. Normally, this is the cross-section of society that suffers most from difficult situations. You know, as a Palestinian and as a woman who has led both a professional career and raised a family, I bear witness to the fact that the Palestinian society is giving greater recognition to the role of women, roles that do not include the valued traditional role of mother and wife and family guardian, but also roles that include legislative council members like Hanan Ashrawi, that many of you probably know, but also in addition, roles played by a woman called Rabiha Diaf, for example, who's a former child prisoner. She was first imprisoned at the age of 12, and who later founded the Palestinian Prisoner Association. And of course, as one of the two women ministers in the present Palestinian cabinet, I'm proof that Palestinian society today also affirms that women can play a leading role in government. However, Palestinian society is a society under occupation. Palestinian men, women, and children alike suffer this occupation and suffer the denial of their freedom. In fact, considering that approximately 46% of Palestinian population is under the age of 14, and another 10% is between the age of 15 and 19, then it becomes clear, and of course approximately half of the Palestinian population is made of women, it becomes clear that the majority of the victims of the Israeli occupation are women and children. Our separate struggles as women or as children are subsumed by the greater collective struggle to end the occupation and to live in freedom. Actually, throughout the years of occupation, we always knew, we sort of ignored our internal social problems, which included domestic violence, it included other problems, but we were so consumed by the occupation itself, by their struggle for freedom, that we have undermined and we did not address sufficiently our internal problems. Well, I would have to say that in no city are the effects of the occupation more apparent than in the holy city of Jerusalem. A city sacred to all three of the world's monotheistic religions, and a city that must not be allowed to become the monopoly of only one. Unilateral Israeli measures in occupied East Jerusalem are effectively taking Jerusalem off the negotiations table and is seriously threatening the two-state solution so much of the world has invested in. As the world is distracted by the so-called opportunity of Gaza disengagement or disengagement of the Israeli army from Gaza, Israel's strategy has been to tighten its hold on East Jerusalem, occupied East Jerusalem. Let's look at the wall. I'm sure you all heard of Israel's wall. And it's not really only a land grab. The most devastating impact of this wall is the collapse of East Jerusalem as an urban, economic, social, educational, health center. Jerusalem, a central area in the occupied West Bank, is the heart of the Palestinian territory, and we can have no viable state without that heart and urban center. Doctors and teachers these days, with the closure of the wall and the establishment of what is called international crossings, that is the checkpoints turned into a national crossing right in the middle of the Palestinian area, doctors and teachers are being denied access to the city. People now from the West Bank need permits to go into the city of East Jerusalem. And the jobs that they have maintained over years will be very difficult to access now with the closure of the wall and the establishment of these crossings. Even though the situation was difficult since 93, but people could sort of go into Jerusalem from side streets and between the homes. This is not going to be possible as of now, or in a couple of months when the wall is completely closed. Now also, as Muslims and Christians from the West Bank are denied access to their holy sites, Jerusalem's mosques will serve fewer people and its churches will become museums. East Jerusalem will become simply another Arab ghetto in Israel. The social fabric of the entire region, approximately 1 million Palestinian in both East Jerusalem, Ramallah, and Bethlehem, I mean, this is like one urban hall, is torn apart as the residents of Ramallah and Bethlehem are denied access to their economic and religious center in East Jerusalem. I want to mention the special effects of women and children. This is our subject tonight. And I want to look at the education sector, where Palestinian children in East Jerusalem are not able to have all their teachers present to have a normal education and a normal daily life. Many children now have to cross Jerusalemites. I mean, there are 120,000 Jerusalem Palestinians living in Jerusalem who live outside the wall and will need to access the surface inside the city. So we have many students who need to cross these checkpoints on a daily basis, and very often they have to start at 6 o'clock in the morning to be able to get to school at 8. Now, in addition to that, there are lack of classrooms in East Jerusalem. And forcing children out of the city for school, threat to Jerusalem residency. Many of the East Jerusalem population is threatened to lose their residency card if they don't live in the city itself for about 7 years. And we found out lately that this Israeli rule has been changed to 2 years. So if, as a Jerusalemite, I don't have the center of life in the city itself for 2 years, I lose my rights to be a resident of the city. And this happened lately for my son. We discovered this by accident when my son came back 2 years after being 2 years away, and he found that he has lost his driving license, he has lost his health insurance, and that's, you know, the first step of having his residency right revoked. There is an escalating dropout rates among youth in Jerusalem due to the wall and the belief that education is not a way to improve or ameliorate the political situation or the economic situation. Opportunities are really getting much less, especially for youth in East Jerusalem. There are some other effects of the situation of the occupation on East Jerusalemites. Israel invests much less into the Palestinian sector of the city, East Jerusalem, than in the West sector. And we find there are very, very few recreational outlets, and there are aggravating social conditions, and there is more pressure on girls and women to stay home, exacerbating the gender division. As the isolation of Jerusalem from other Palestinian areas continue, the loss of national and cultural identity increases, and we have a major problem among youth in East Jerusalem. They don't know where they belong anymore. They're annexed to Israel, but they are not Israeli citizens, and they will never be acknowledged as other equally within Israel. But they're also isolated from the rest of the West Bank, so are not really Palestinians, and we have a problem recently where youth is wondering whether they'll be able to participate in the upcoming elections next January. I mean, Israel is putting quite some obstacles facing the holding of these elections. As a result of this tense situation, of course it has secondary effects, and we have an increase in drug use and an increase in domestic violence in the city. And women are, of course, the primary caretakers in Palestinian society. Women assume the greatest burden in relation to caring for their families upon the destruction of their homes and their dispossession, as well as the loss of financial resources under occupation. I have to mention here that Israel have pursued a policy of home demolition in East Jerusalem. Last year, 150 homes were demolished, and there are 10,000 pending demolition order against Palestinian buildings in East Jerusalem. So the sense of dispossession is very, very strong and possible. That creates a lot of pressure on women for the fear of losing their homes. Of course, this reality affects women's ability to receive an education or participate in income generation activities, diminishing their socioeconomic position. The Israeli nationality and entry into Israel law, it was passed in 2003, which present family unification when one spouse is a resident of the occupied Palestinian territory, has affected thousands of family members who live separately from each other with no legal means to unify the family. And this is happening quite often now with this complete closure of East Jerusalem, where many couples find that one couple has identity cards for the West Bank and is illegally living in Jerusalem. And this is causing even a number of divorces lately, because people would have to choose either live inside the city or in the West Bank, let alone the problem this causes to children. Well, in this situation, with so much dire situation of Palestinians living in East Jerusalem and of Palestinians all over the West Bank, we find that Israel is getting away with these measures because the international community fails to hold Israel accountable. There doesn't seem to be effective global governance, and the lack of it has taught Israel that it could be above the law. I mean, take the wall, for example. The ICJ ruling, the International Court of Justice ruling, last summer in 2004, you know, has called the wall illegal and asked the international community to take action to force compliance by Israel of the Fourth Geneva Convention. You know, the very law that was established to protect populations under occupation, like the Palestinians. Today, the international community has done nothing to uphold ICJ decisions, and Israel continues to build the wall, and in the process expropriating more Palestinian land, dividing Palestinian community, and isolating Jerusalem from the rest of the occupied West Bank. Well, if we're truly concerned about the situation of women and children of Palestine, we must be concerned about ending the occupation they live under. If the international community is truly wishes to foster a better life for Palestinian women and children, the international community should focus less on talking and more on doing. The simple, most effective means of helping Palestinian women and children is to hold Israel accountable for the violations of the rights of those women and children. Well, I don't want to imply at all that we are powerless and we don't have a role to play. And in this regard, I'm very much encouraged by the work of MEND, which sponsors centers for active Palestinian nonviolent resistance to the Israeli occupation. And it is one of the first institutions that actually called for training and for establishing a nonviolent culture in Palestinian society. And I'm very glad to say there are some other nucleus of nonviolent resistance work by other organizations. But we have to commend Lucy for starting this, I think, tonight. It's because of my belief in nonviolence as an effective and legitimate means of ending the Israeli occupation that I have gladly agreed to serve on MEND's board. It gives me great pleasure to know that MEND is expanding its effort into the United Kingdom. Well, on behalf of Palestinian women and children and on behalf of the Palestinian Authority, I thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Jens. I'd like now to invite Jonathan Bentall to address you. Jonathan is a trustee of MEND and is an honorary research fellow in the Department of Anthropology at the University of London and formerly chair of INTREC, International NGO Training and Research Center in Oxford. Jonathan.
Thank you. I've put together some thoughts on the cultural background to nonviolence in the region. MEND is, of course, an entirely non-confessional charity, but the geopolitical reality is that in Israel-Palestine, religion has recently become more important rather than less. With the weakening of the Christian-Arab presence, it's worth asking to what extent nonviolence has a place in Muslim culture. A well-known Muslim scholar, Akbar Ahmed, has written that turning the other cheek is alien to Islam. But is this correct? Muslims greet each other daily with a salam alaikum, the salutation of peace given by the angels to the righteous on entering paradise, while rich connotations of peace as well as submission are enfolded in the word Islam itself. One of the most impressive instances of non-violence in Muslim history is the Hudai Hitmatgar, Servants of God, an organization of Pathan nationalists in the northeast frontier province of British India, who conducted a campaign of non-violence against British rule between the two world wars, inspired by Gandhi, despite the Pathan's reputation as a warrior people. Their leader, Khan Abdul Ghaffar Khan, was known as the Frontier Gandhi. Their dedication to pan-Indian nationalism led to their being erased from the historiography of Pakistan after partition in 1947. They explicitly drew on Islamic values of patience and restraint and wore red uniforms, the color red having historical associations in India with the military and the police, in order to mock and subvert the British image of hypermasculinity with a countervailing image of restraint and self-control that was truly manly. This is borrowed from a book by the anthropologist Mukulika Banerjee called The Pathan Unarmed. Now, for a non-violent movement to succeed, much depends on the political complexion of the dominant power. During the Nazi period, the Jehovah's Witnesses under German rule refused to do war-related work or to vote. The sect was banned, they were ruthlessly persecuted, and many of them died in concentration camps. By contrast, Gandhi's saintly style, in quotes, of politics, proved on the whole effective in India, despite a measure of racial hatred against the British occupier. Gandhi's philosophy was to seek a level of truth uniting two opposing parties and firmly but non-violently grasp it so as to convert the opponent eventually. Thus, in 1931, he was able to form a personal relationship with a devoutly Christian viceroy, Irwin, that resulted in a pact to lift some of the government's repressive measures in return for the suspension of civil disobedience. Gandhi had a barrister's training and made masterly use of the mass media of his day. Despite the tragic spread of violence in Israel-Palestine today, some ingredients are present that make non-violence a possible option. Israel has a free press, by contrast with nearly all its neighbors, and independent judiciary. Judaism and Islam are bound together by close theological and ethical links. There is potential for an appeal to a common ground, raising the level of discussion upwards to Gandhi's truth. The trouble is that violence is addictive. Non-violence risks being worthy but dull. Gandhi and the Pathan nationalists, in their different ways, found methods for solving that problem. That's why I like Men's zippy slogan, "Smarter without violence." No one should pretend that non-violence is an easy option, but at least it offers some hope. It's very encouraging that I understand up till a few years ago the very idea of non-violence as a principle was regarded as a rather alien concept in the region. But a lot has changed over the last few years, to a great extent thanks to MEND and also because of the changed political situation. In any case, anyone who contends that Muslims are inevitably violent by nature should be sharply challenged as to the historical facts.
So, well, in a moment, Lucy will show us that she is smart, worthy, but certainly not dull. Lucy is the founder and director of Middle East Nonviolence and Democracy, which is a Palestinian non-profit organization based in East Jerusalem, established in 1998 and focusing on education and innovative media techniques to promote active non-violence. Lucy is also currently a fellow of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, working on a policy paper for women waging peace on Israeli and Palestinian women peacemakers. Before setting up MEND, Lucy directed the Palestinian Center for the Study of Nonviolence and the Palestinian Center for Democracy and Elections during the 1996 Palestinian elections, where, of course, I remember the other candidate was a woman. She lost. She taught for 9 years at the Department of Cultural Studies and Philosophy at BSH University and was educated at Oxford and Harvard. Lucy.
Thank you so much. It's really such a pleasure to be here tonight. I feel it's a really happy occasion for me to be launching MEND UK, and I'm so pleased that so many people have come. I have many thanks to give to everyone, to Mary Kaldor for giving us this wonderful venue, to everyone who has worked to make this launch possible, to Robin Keeley to coming and chairing it and for his help in getting men started, to Hind to coming all the way from Jerusalem and honoring us with her presence, to Dana, who at 15 is willing to come and travel and speak, to Jonathan Bentall, who has put lots of work into really getting men registered and making this event possible, and particularly to Gillian Mosley, who has really been the moving force behind Mend UK. I would like, if possible, to give her a special clap. I think she is really absolutely amazing. There are many other people, including her assistant, Anna Pearson, including Lady Warnock, who unfortunately couldn't join us. But anyway, thank you all. And I hope this will be the beginning of creating a new nonviolent Middle East. This is what maybe one day we'll look back on this. I think this is the start of it. MEND, which stands for Middle East Nonviolence and Democracy, grew out of many years of experience with nonviolent activism and with the Palestinian education system and with various initiatives towards peace between Palestinians and Israelis. It seemed clear to me that the best way to contribute and to be effective in bringing about a real peace would be to work towards spreading awareness about the potential for nonviolence, and in particular to work within the education system. I understand nonviolence in a slightly broader sense than Jonathan just described it, in the very broad sense of the development of individual or national potential. If you take this as the contrary to violence, which can be described as the cutting off of potential, and this can include invisible violence such as structural or institutional violence. Nonviolence is the opposite of that. It's really expanding potential. And taking democracy in the sense of active participation, awareness of choices, and taking responsibility for those choices. By training and educating the younger generation, we could open up people's ears and prepare the ground for peace. We could also give hope and help restore the self-esteem that has been so severely battered by decades of occupation. During MEND's first project, Strengthening Nonviolence in Jerusalem Schools, which was funded, thanks to Robin Keeley, by the British Consulate General in Jerusalem. During this project, which worked with about 30 schools in the Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Ramallah area, in one of the classes, which was filled with teenage boys in a large municipal school in Jerusalem, this was in 1999, when there was a peace process going on, when there was generally optimism, and it was in Jerusalem, which was still moderately open at that stage. The class were asked what they would like to do, what would they like to be. I don't know what normally you would get as an answer in an English school, but these boys had no answer at all. They just sat and looked glum. And one of them, after a few minutes, suggested half jokingly and rather sheepishly, well, maybe I could become a porter like my father. In the old city, the streets are very narrow. People carry fridges even on their back. They become incredibly strong. This boy's father did that for his living. And that was the extent of his imagination for his future. It's been, obviously, since then, much more of a problem what people can imagine as a future when they have no freedom of movement, when they have no likelihood that they will ever have an independent state. It's therefore part of what we are trying to do at MEND is to recreate hope, to get people some way to work, to create choices within their lives that will get away this overwhelming despair. By working creatively with the rigid and rote learning based Palestinian education system, and by encouraging awareness of the importance of communications and of alternatives to violence, and above all of the potential for choosing and building one's own future, MEND is trying to be a beacon of hope in a situation that for most Palestinians is one of the utmost despair. The work of MEND is not only relevant internally to Palestinian society, but it is also, I think, of vital importance in terms of the fears and the negative stereotypes that feed into the conflict. To far too many people, just the word Palestinian is enough to conjure up fears of violence and terrorism. This is as unjust as it is counterproductive. It is the Israeli fears of Palestinian violence which allow for so much injustice under the guise of security, such as the separation wall. With sufficient awareness among Israelis about Palestinian nonviolence, these fears can start to be assuaged and the human connections can start to flourish. I want to show you, this was a very small project of MEND. These two bumper stickers say, "What about our children?" I don't know if you can read them, in Arabic and in Hebrew. We did several different slogans with the same in English and in Arabic and in Hebrew to start to raise awareness of the shared values across the conflict in a non-threatening way. Now, we are working with this slogan, "Smarter Without Violence," which we are hoping will catch on everywhere. We are going to do, this actually is also newly funded by the British government, you'll be pleased to hear, having been turned down by the Americans on the ground that there was too much competition. This, we will do it also with Arabic on one side and Hebrew on the other side, "Smarter Without Violence." In particular, I think you can only break a cycle of violence with something different. You need nonviolence. And so by working with schools, we started to get the idea of nonviolence into people's discourse and into people's way of dealing with conflict. We started with a number of workshops. At the first workshop that we organized, we brought teachers, we brought PLC members, we brought some conflict resolution experts and some drama and art experts to all discuss how to deal just with the problem of violence in schools. And out of this, we designed a number of pilot workshops. But most of the schools requested lectures on punishment and reward. It's a very traditional system. So it was quite an achievement just to start working on communications workshops with teachers on drama and psychodrama. We produced a play with this, a whole class of children in one refugee camp who wrote their play, who acted it, and then took it around the West Bank. We then developed this. When the violence broke out, we started to work on counseling. The trauma that Robin mentioned is terrifying. The levels of trauma, even after 1 year, were something like 95% of children in badly affected areas had post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. The long-term effects of all this, no one can know, but it clearly doesn't bode well for the future. So we are trying to deal with this. It affects, when people are frightened, they can't think. We went to visit a class of 14-year-olds fairly soon after the violence broke out, and they had to do a very simple exercise, which was joining up dots, which were in the shape of triangles or in the shape of squares, and copy a triangle or a square. You would think that most 5 or 6-year-olds could do this pretty easily. These children were normal children. They were doing fine academically, but their concentration was so disturbed by their level of fear that not a single one of them could complete the piece of paper. They could not join up triangular dots in the shape of triangles. It was simply a matter that they couldn't concentrate. And this again, this was 5 years ago. The cumulative fear and anxiety since then leaves one wondering what people can do now in terms of concentration. We have recently at MEND started working in a number of ways to counteract this within even the school education system. We continued with the project of working directly with schools, with children, with staff in a holistic fashion, but we have also done some work now. We did some research into the problems in Palestinian society, and through this we've learned how much self-esteem has suffered, how much there are problems even between the collective values and the individual values, how people cannot even deal with their own individuality in any way anymore. So we have, amongst our projects now, is actually a joint project, which we are developing a curriculum, which we will hope to introduce into the school system, to try to cope directly with these problems. The society, as Minister Hindhuri said, is really suffering very much from a lack of hope. And what we are trying to do with MEND is to give the hope back, and to give back the self-esteem and build it up so that ultimately it will be possible for both sides to communicate and to hear each other and to work towards a peaceful resolution of the conflict. In addition to working with schools, for instance, we organized for a few years international summer camps. We brought Palestinian children together with black South African children, and they shared their experiences, and that helped them to develop. The South African organization was a trauma center, and the second year of the camps, they sent us a girl who had witnessed a massacre at the age of 5 and who hadn't spoken since. After 3 days in a Palestinian village with Palestinian children who had also suffered, she was not only speaking, she actually was singing and dancing. She took part in an open day at the end of that camp and was up on the stage. She was completely cured just by the catalytic experience of being with people from another conflict and sharing it. What we've also tried to do is work a lot with media. Our approach is holistic, it's media-based. We have worked with media, for instance, in terms of radio work. We have produced a radio soap opera which spreads nonviolence among the youth in Palestine. It's now just completing its third series. This is unique. There are no locally produced soap operas. There are no other radio soap operas. And people love it because it has local sound effects. It deals with the issues that affect their daily lives, things that perhaps are foreign to people here, though, like arranged marriages, problems of early marriage, gender equality, not perhaps so strange to people here, but the issues that people really care about. And we have developed a curriculum that goes with this that now is being taken also to schools. We have another project working with school counselors, training them in nonviolence and conflict resolution in conjunction with the Ministry of Education so that they can also help deal with trauma and with children. I think you're waiting to hear more, though, perhaps about the MENDAs and about the active nonviolence. Out of our summer camps, some of the children wanted to stay together and wanted to develop the skills that they'd learnt, the training that they had in active nonviolence in their summer camps. And they called themselves MENDAs, and they produced a newsletter, and we have continued working with them. We started with a group of MENDAs in Jerusalem and gave them more training in drama and communication, so they would be, each year they do a different play. And We also have taken them to Cyprus. We've given them peer mediation, and they went to Berlin. They also did a radio program. To start with, they were simply interviewed on issues, but then they got to the stage that they actually produced their own radio program, and they took a subject of Palestinian nonviolence as one of the examples, a hunger strike that the prisoners in Palestine went on that didn't actually make the international media, although when British Airways at the same time threatened to strike, that was instantly news. So there's a media problem somewhere there. You will hear more about this from Dana, but partly based on our work with schools and the reputation that we built up, MEND was asked to train activists, political activists, in active nonviolence. And what we have done is organized training and set up centers all over the West Bank, and now we are just setting up one in Gaza. We have active nonviolence centers run by volunteers in all the major cities in the West Bank. And we have MENDAS groups attached to these, where we are training youth in active nonviolence and in a filmmaking method called participatory video, which was actually developed in Reading by a group called Real Time Video Community Activists. And we now have children in Tulkarim who have produced their own film. We will have films produced by each of these groups, which they will share with each other, and perhaps in the future, perhaps share also with children in England and in other places. It's a form of empowerment, and it's a form of developing self-expression, and it gets people back in touch also with who they are and where they're going to work with film like this. It's a method that we also used in a couple of films about women and work with violence against women. We've done a number of projects focusing specifically on girls and women. One called Choose a Future, where we worked with a lot of girls' schools with the age at which girls mostly drop out of school, and we trained them in how you look at dreams, how you then can start to imagine a future for yourself where you're doing things. And we trained them again in video making, in computer use. And many of them are still active. They started doing volunteer work when the violence broke out. And in a very traditional village, which didn't even have a clinic, our group of Choose a Future girls actually took hold of an empty building and established a clinic. They got doctors, they got medicines. They completely took control, although we selected the village in that school because it was a place that really was against any development of women. So it's possible to make very quick change through the kind of projects that we do. We have also set up a lot of community centers with books, with computers, where people go and give gender training, give other trainings, where children go to keep their keep themselves busy rather than going and joining in demonstrations. In the future at MEND, we would really like to expand our programs to meet more people. Training costs money, everything takes money. And so Hope for Peace would need support. For the Palestinians generally, I think you've heard, the situation really looks bleak. It's even both in terms of a viable state and even in terms of basic human security. We would like your help to help give people security and to help give them hope. The militant leaders, the ex-militants rather, the Fatah leaders in our active nonviolence centers, they came to us specifically to ask for our help to give their children a better future. They said, we're sick of this cycle of activism and prison and activism and prison. We want something better. They asked for our training and our tools to enable them to build a future that would be really democratic and free from violence, a future quite different from any life they've ever known. They promised me that if they were given these and could have centers to work from, They could prevent children from becoming suicide bombers. They could build a peaceful Middle East. So let's work together and help in creating a peaceful Middle East. And let's address the issues and start by helping children to have the chance to grow up free from fear and participate in the choices for their future. Let's give them hope. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lucy. It's fascinating and impressive to hear how much you've not only persevered but developed the work of men's over these last very difficult years since I was in Jerusalem. Now I have a chance to hear from one of the girls from MEND, MEND graduate, either way, Dana Abdel Fattah. It's very nice to have you with us. Dana was born in Palestine in 1990, to reveal your age, and is currently attending Schmidt Girls College, just north of the Old City in Jerusalem. Dana participated in the MEND youth program for 2 years, and she has taken courses in leadership and mediation. Dana has also joined drama courses and taken a part in the weekly program about youth problems on the radio. Her favorite part was when she, with fellow MEND members, traveled to Cyprus and Germany, where they had the chance to meet Cypriot and German youth and heard them present their culture and country and to take courses in solving conflict. Dana, over to you.
Hi. I want to say that it's really an honor to be with you here tonight. And so, as a 15-year-old Palestinian girl, I encounter violence in my daily life as a result of the Israeli occupation. As I travel to Ramallah in the West Bank, the checkpoints I pass and the Israeli soldiers I meet aggravate me and disturb me greatly at the mistreatment I receive and observe is inhuman. I face all this on my way to courses on conflict resolution. When I first heard about MEND, I was very much interested, as it aims to improve and develop the youth's personalities, raise awareness, and eliminate opportunities of using violence throughout their lives. So a person could imagine the thrill and anticipation I felt upon hearing about MEND and of the goal it has to reach equality and democracy. During the 2 years I've been attending MEND, we've received courses and tutoring through fun games and exciting methods. Our group is made up of girls and boys aged 14 to 18 years old from Ramallah and Jerusalem. Our training has involved various subjects such as conflict resolution, leadership, discovering our souls, communication, and courses in mediation. We've also participated in drama and performed 2 sketches about domestic violence and the need for gender equality. The other sketch was about the problems that the youth face in attending universities. Via drama, we've succeeded in delivering our points of view and messages, and in return, some solutions were suggested to rectify these problems. I found the drama was one of the most motivating activities, as drama conduced to the expanding of our imagination and taught us skills like commitment, independent thinking, and confidence. We've also visited children with special needs, cancer victims, and retirement homes, which enhance our ability for helping people. MEND has established a magazine called The Impact, which is released every 2 to 3 months. And in it, different opinions are given on a diverse variety of topics. MEND has also offered us the opportunity to participate in live radio discussions which deal with youth issues and problems. We've discussed various subjects such as the relationship between the youth and their parents, being creative, how to spend your time, and other various subjects. At first, we were interviewed, and then we were able to take the whole responsibility of running the program on our own. This was a great experience which taught us a lot. International summer camps have been also organized in Cyprus and Germany, which included training conflict resolution. In the summer camps, we were given the opportunity to represent our culture and society to foreigners, revealing our situation in Palestine, also expanding our horizons amongst other cultures. During our stay in Germany and Cyprus, we had the chance to meet with media and discuss the aims of MENT. After 2 years of hard training, we've succeeded in training youths and have given them courses in conflict resolution and communication skills through exciting methods. This project allowed a new flow of experiences which have improved my personality, as it has been enriched by new social skills, self-confidence, independence, and self-awareness about the environment surrounding me. My strong relationships with the other Menders has nurtured and empowered my personality. We've achieved many things that have had a great effect on us in these 2 years and have spent many beautiful moments that we will cherish forever.
Thank you very much, Dana. Now, just before we throw the proceedings open to the floor, because I'm sure we hope that we've simulated quite a few questions, there's one or two issues we might just discuss for a few minutes on the platform. One point which caught my attention was what you said, Hind, about the, in effect, the outside world knowing really what Palestinians were like or could be like, and understanding more about them, which, to my mind, in a way, raises the issue of the advocacy role which MEND UK may be playing, may hope to play. I wonder whether you could say a few words about that. Jonathan, how you see that?
Well, it's Gillian Moseley is the chair of MEND UK, and it's really for her to lead on this. But at the moment, MEND UK is simply raising funds to send out to MEND Palestine. But we wouldn't exclude the possibility of an advocacy role later if things developed in a fruitful way.
Another issue, I think we talked about the degree to which domestic violence, as well as civil violence or society violence, is a problem. It may be also a problem in Israel as well. And I'd be interested to hear perhaps from you, Lucy, and also perhaps you, Hind, how are there organizations like yours working in Israel, whether with the Jewish or the Arab citizens of Israel, and do you have a relationship with them, and how are organizations like yours seen in Israel?
We have done a number of joint projects, particularly with the Hebrew University. The project I mentioned about values and developing a curriculum is actually a joint one with the Hebrew University. And we have been in touch with the media, for instance, about the question of how to change the negative stereotypes of Palestinians. And they're interested in that. I was even approached by an Israeli woman who was interested in men setting up a branch and training Israelis in nonviolence, because she was telling me how Israel has the highest rate in the world of violence in schools. And obviously you can't be in a conflict and be involved in that violence without it reflecting back on both societies. It's something that both societies need to work in different ways. But I've had very, very positive feedback about men from both sides.
When do you want to?
Well, it is encouraging to see that there are some organizations who are working on nonviolence in both the Israeli sector and the Palestinian sector. I think we need to do more. Certainly every organization can do more. The trauma, on especially on youth, is quite tremendous, and it has to be addressed. What is necessary also is that these organizations work more closely together, creating networks of nonviolent organization, nonviolent resistance kind of organizations, who will certainly seek to have more impact on the society. The negative change in that part of the world is happening too fast. The impact on youth is much too tremendous. I think the dehumanization of the occupation, especially on the Palestinian side, has really had an impact, and it has to be addressed. Young people need to find out what it means like really to be human. And that also means to be stronger. That also means to have options. That also means to think more strategically. So it is my hope that in the next step, as we're getting support from abroad, like MEND UK, that internally there are networks that work closer together.
Thanks. We've talked a lot about what civil society, perhaps both sides of the Green Line, can do, is doing, and hopes to do. Of course, the governments have a role as well. And again, I'd be interested to hear from you both. Is there enough being done on both sides at the government level to deal with the problem of incitement? And incitement happens on both sides of the Green Line. It was an issue when I was there. Something was done. It's not obvious that a great deal is being done, but perhaps things are changing in the last few months. I don't know. Hind, do you would like to say something on that issue?
Well, government policy certainly of Abu Mazen is that of trying to limit incitement as much as possible. There is work being done with the schools, with the within the mosques as well, and in the media. Well, I think what is very important in this instance is how the context really helps people to view that these are the right policies. Because as the violence continues, people are going to think, okay, here we are trying to limit our narrative to an inclusive narrative, to a peaceful narrative. But the context keep on getting worse. That's where the role of international community is extremely important. And Palestinians cannot keep on working in vacuum. They have to be encouraged that there are returns to peace, returns to all the initiatives they have taken. And in addition to sort of limiting incitement and so on, the Palestinian Authority is really working on the democratization process. We've had a year of elections in the Palestinian areas, presidential, local elections, legislative elections are coming in January, and there's a major public sector reforms going on that includes security reforms, financial reforms, and all this sort certainly will help create a more peaceful community. But then we need reciprocity, and here where it would be extremely important if Israel would lend a hand to the Palestinian Authority and get moving on the roadmap and the peace process.
Well, yes, I think actually, I mean, MEND works very, very well with a lot of support from the Palestinian Authority. We work with the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Youth and Sport. We did this work for Sesame Street with the Ministry of Planning, the Secretariat for Palestinian Children, and they organized workshops for all the primary teachers all over the country around this, which promotes peace and empowerment. We've had tremendous support. And actually, I was... We have worked quite closely with the son of the president of Palestine, who owns a printing company, and he is very supportive. He has offered us billboard space to promote messages of nonviolence. He would love to help us to organize summer camps for youth, like on the lines of military camps, but adventure nonviolence camps for nonviolence. There's support at every level that we've found for our work, especially from the government.
Dana, do you want to comment on this at all? On Dita Alik?
I forgot the question.
About the extent to which the governments on both sides could do more, or are beginning to do more, to reduce the incitement, to try and promote non-violence themselves, or they're just leaving it to MEND and people like MEND?
No, I'm definite that the government is taking an important role in promoting non-violence. Well, I have to admit that I'm not very good at politics, but what I've heard and what I've noticed that the government is really helping in the and supporting us. We've also They are. We've also went to the what is it called?
The Legislative Council.
Yes.
Tashlia.
Yeah. And there we've discussed various subjects with them and talked about nonviolence and the causes and
they were very receptive.
They liked it. Yes.
Yes.
And finally, I think before we throw it open to the floor, an issue which I often used to ask myself, and when I wasn't asking myself, people used to ask me, about the general issue of what you might call people to people. Now, Mend isn't strictly people to people, but Lucy's just said that she does have experience of the same thing. And I have, as I reminded Hind, the first time I met her, it was discussing people to people. Is this something which is worth doing, and if so, in what circumstances? Is it just a substitute, which it can't be, for proper progress on the peace process? Where's the value added? What makes a good people-to-people project? Do you want to try and take that one first? Says that you used to steer them.
Well, yes, reviewing the work of people-to-people over the last decade or more, actually. Yes, it helped it bring some people together, but I think overall it was not a terribly successful experience because people took the easy way out. And it has become, in a way, in a sense, an industry. It is still very important, and we need to address it. But I think these projects have to look more seriously on how they can influence the context. Because if that context is not changed, it's not going to really help the narrative that people use to express their daily life, a narrative of inclusiveness. The context has to change first, and then the narrative, the inclusiveness, will certainly come and will certainly follow. I think this is the lesson we have learned from the experience of the last few years.
I think it's tremendously important to work against the dehumanization, to counteract that. I think it's debatable. It's very much how you both said, that it's how the people-to-people projects are done. I think just putting people together isn't necessarily a worthwhile exercise. But if people learn to work, to listen to each other more, and to have some form of resonance when one side is doing something, reaching out a hand. I think, you know, when people say there is no partner, no one to talk to, this is nonsense when the Israelis say this. There is a partner among Palestinians, and if people to people would help that, then I'm all for it.
I mean, I think, from my own experience, if it's just, as they say, the usual suspects, having a nice meeting and going away again, then they perhaps they don't need the Norwegians or the Brits or anyone else to support that. They can do it without help. It's the people who don't find it natural or so easy. There can be the added value. And, of course, if they can go away having done the exercise, done the project, and try and spread the word, as it were, be multipliers, then that also can help. So I don't think anything can be a substitute for a proper peace process, or a proper peace, I should say, but it can help on the way. It's some kind of palliative, and it may be better than that when the circumstances permit. That's my view for what it's worth. But we've talked quite a lot to you, but we hope that we've explained a lot about why MEND is and what MEND can come to be with your help. But I suspect we haven't answered all, given you all the information you want, so now's your chance to put some questions to the panel. We have, I think, two radio mics, which will come to the raised hands, and I see a raised hand at the back. Sir.
Thank you. A two-part question to Jonathan, if I may. Firstly, in terms of cultural background that you talked about, is there any tradition of non-violence within Judaism? And secondly, excellent and laudable as the MEND program is, it's in marked contrast, is it not, with the way Mahatma Gandhi, that you talked about, actually used non-violence in his program? And is there a danger that the Israeli authorities will simply look upon MEND as a very convenient placebo?
The first question about Judaism, I would say yes, but I don't... I don't think we should really dwell on that issue now. We've got very, very little time. The second, I think it's fair to say that MEND does have projects which come a little bit nearer to Gandhian activities than what we've been talking about today. We've been talking very much about children and youth, but I think there are other aspects to MEND's activities which Lucy could have talked about. But MEND UK has made the decision to concentrate entirely on children and youth projects for the time being. As regards the ultimate political consequences and repercussions of this, it's not really for me to comment on that. I think it's more for people who are on the spot.
In a way, we were touching on that by implication in the last little bit of our discussion, but perhaps it's the opportunity, Minister.
No, I mean, that was a very interesting comment regarding non-violence as being something convenient for Israel. I think we need to look at non-violence resistance, especially in terms of training, in terms of strengthening the character of youth, increasing their options, making them take a distance from their reality and think a little bit more strategically. And as you know, the violence of the Second Intifada was a reactive violence. It was not a planned violence that really sought objectives. We know it's in a sense a state of chaos. And I mean, this is very unfortunate, and it has certainly didn't serve a purpose, really, not much. So we need to strengthen, I think it's very important internally for us, that we build organization, that we take a distance from matters, that we build character, that we reduce fear among youth, which is extremely important. And I mean, I see how youth react, and fear is a very paralyzing thing. These are the things we really need to get over for our own sake. Well, if nonviolence eventually will prove non-productive and we continue to suffer the consequences, well, who knows what's going to happen? Well, we probably know what's going to happen. That's why I say it's very important that all these efforts at reducing violence, teaching nonviolence, are matched by efforts certainly from Israel to reduce the violent policy, to change policy, as well as the international community. I find we are all responsible, the international community, international civil society, the Israeli government, and the Palestinian. If finally we don't all play our role, I mean, the situation is not going to ameliorate, I'm afraid.
That's laying it on the line. Now, next question. Right there, right below me. Right over the mic here.
Thank you. If I may again ask a twofold question. The primary beneficiaries of creating a mentality that seeks peace through nonviolent means are not only the Palestinians, but of course also the Israelis. Has the Israeli government and Israeli donors and Israeli institutions shown any support, and in that I mean material support and moral support, to the activities of MEND? This is one part of the question. It maybe you can answer it by also telling us if there have been any joint activities with other Israeli NGOs or political movements like Peace Now. And the second part is a technical question about your activities. One of the ways that you can channel your anger and your frustration as a child is to seek psychological support. And is MEND training any psychiatrists that would help the children overcome trauma and channel their anger into positive mindsets that will help them see the possibility of change and of political activism within the framework of a peaceful mode of action?
These are both for you, Mrs. Nzebe.
Okay, well, the first one, we have never actually sought any support from any Israeli source, but we do work with Israelis who are interested in working with us. I'm always open to that, and we have done a number of joint projects. We took a group of Israeli and Palestinian women to Belfast and to Washington to meet with other organizations. The initial Sesame Street project was also with Israelis, and this follow-up one involved some kind of partnership with them. I think it depends very much on the project, but it's worthwhile. In terms of high-level support, we have never sought any, but... No, I don't think so. We did actually organize after the assassination of Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. We were worried that the level of violence would be ratcheted up. Everyone was frightened. And we organized a signed statement in the local press, which came out in the two leading Arabic newspapers, which condemned violence and called for an end to suicide bombings. It said enough bloodshed and called for a new nonviolent intifada. And this was signed by leading figures within the PLO and from all over the Palestinian community. And this, you know, I heard indirectly, was very, very much appreciated within the Israeli government. But I only heard indirectly. I never heard anything more than that. So at that level, there's the kind of resonance that I mentioned earlier, that I think that these things are heard and they help. But beyond that, I think it would be difficult to do anything. In terms of the psychological support, it's exactly actually what we do, but again, it's less the work with youth. It's more the work with the ex-militants who we work with. Exactly the first component of the nonviolence training is looking at the anger and the frustration and finding ways to channel this into creative activities. And this is what transforms these people who have spent many years of their lives in prison and what convinces them. With children, there are many groups that now are working with trauma and are trying to, and it's part of also of what we do. But we're not specialists. We use the trained people that there are.
Question there. And I've got one here, and I've got one further back after that. Sorry? God. Were you pointing up or asking a question down there? One, you first, and then we'll come up. Yeah. Bring the mic.
Culture of non-violence. In fact, when you meet Palestinian people in person, especially students, or you get invited to Palestinians in their homes, you realize, in fact, what a completely non-violent people they are. And you, when you learn firsthand from the suffering of these people and the daily, what Lucy calls, invisible violence from the Israeli governments and Israeli institutions, police and military, at every checkpoint, on the buses when they get... The women get denigrated, and the way the chaps see their mothers and sisters being treated, you understand where that violence comes from. It is not an ingrained cultural Palestinian thing. It is a reaction to the hopelessness and the oppression of the Palestinians. And with regards to what the lady was asking, are there psychiatrists working with children? Yes, there are several psychiatrists working in the Gaza with children with special projects to help them with post-traumatic stress disorders. Actually, there has been a BBC documentary about it.
Of course, Iyad Sarraj, for example. Now, we're going to have a couple from up here on the shelf. There, the lady, yes, there's one with the green band right behind there. Green hair band. Now you can see what I can.
Thank you. I worked the last 3 years and 9 months in Palestine. During all this time, it was very easy to get donors to fund any project that would put Palestinians and Israelis playing 20 minutes of football together or playing food or whatever, as if this would change the conflict. And then one goes back to a refugee camp without water, the other goes back to a swimming pool and swim. Yeah. So I think we have to keep in mind that there's a unique situation, that the Palestinians were the only ones who were a national liberation movement, that they have to sit with their oppressor, and they have to manage to get this unequally and asymmetrically in a peace kind of thing that obviously will never take anybody anywhere. So it's a matter of illegality. Israelis are committing all the illegality and flouting international law. And I think this thing brings a kind of disservice. We come here and people who don't know the situation on the ground, they would think, oh, you know, Palestinians, they're violent, blah, blah, blah. So I think we have to think of I mean, when I was inside, I was the first one to say we cannot excuse the Palestinians from having domestic violence just because they are frustrated with soldiers, etc. But when you come out, it's much more helpful that the British Council or the British government will do something to end occupation and to do things than these kind of things that sincerely will not take anybody much further. So I think we have to think of peace education for Israelis. People to people, we have to be different than oppressors and oppressed. And then we're going to go somewhere. And I think the money from Britain, who actually has historical responsibilities in this confusion, would much better be done in a situation that would force Israelis to give up, you know, things. And otherwise, they're going to have dreams and they're going to have visions. But in the end of the day, who comes to LSE are the Israeli ones, and the Palestinians can only be porters in a very narrow streets of the old city, now even more full of Israeli soldiers. So I think it's this dilemma, like we, the relief community, have to keep every day struggling. If you're going to abandon these communities now stuck by the wall, or if you're going to help them with mobile clinics, and then we're indirectly helping occupation. So the whole thing is to end occupation, and then further you can do other things. So I feel very frustrated with this kind of meetings, because it can even convey a wrong idea that there are two equal sides, and one side is very rejectionist, and they don't want to believe in peace. One is doing the wrong things, and it has to be named. Thank you.
We have, yes. Can we have a question, by the way, as well?
I
mean,
I have a question. I wanted to know, in a different perspective, how is to work or deal with other social organizations that live in Palestine, like Hamas, how you deal with them or how you work with them, and how difficult it might be when they are spreading other message.
In a way, it's a general question about how you work anyway with other NGOs, but the very specific one about Hamas, and perhaps you might both want to take this one. Shall I start?
Okay. Well, Hamas is part of Palestinian society. They're not something alien. And people from Hamas have attended our workshops. People come out of curiosity to see what this nonviolent stuff is. And some of them like it. No one has been hostile afterwards. So, of course, they're welcome from Hamas. It's something that I think anyone can work with to end the occupation, by the way, in relation to the previous speaker. This is the way to end it. It's one way to... This is what we're working towards. Even with Hamas. Hamas can use nonviolence. And recently, for instance... Hamas have shifted their position on violence to say that it should only be against soldiers, against military targets, which I think is an important distinction.
Do you want to say something about that as well?
You know, I would change the question around and look at the source of violence, and we all know that if we want nonviolence, really, the occupation should be ended, as somebody else just said a while back. However, we have an internal strategy within the Palestinian Authority on how to create consensus, how to diminish the divisions among the various Palestinian political groups. And that's why all groups are invited to participate in the legislative elections upcoming next January, because democracy certainly will reduce the level of violence, I think. But also, we need to make sure that all factions do participate, that they do become part of governance, that there is some national consensus and decisions that would allow to hold everybody accountable, Hamas and other groups, to make sure that the strategies of the country, the policies, are being implemented. Hamas has developed some credibility in Palestinian society because they do provide very good social and economic services to the community. They have good leaders. I don't approve some of their approaches. But then being part of government, I think, is going to change the situation whereby we all work in a very strategic manner to implement very clear programs. Thanks.
Now, I think I'll take two more questions, one from Michelle and one from the posh people down below, or whatever. And then I think we'll have to draw this to an end. So one more up here. Big dress, I can't give it, it's sort of pinkish. There you are.
Oh my God. I feel like I ought to share this. I've got two questions. The first is about sustainability. The kind of programs that you're describing, Lucy, sound like good quality participatory youth work. I've done a lot of it. I've even used real time too. I'm just interested in what evidence you've seen that creates any sustainable change for young people in a context where they may not actually have a very wide range of choices. So you can, you know, empowerment gets you so far, and then you're dealing with the reality where your choices are very limited. So that's one question. And the second one's a little bit cynical, I suppose. You were talking a lot about fighting the way that Palestinians are perceived. And I'm interested in as to what motivated MEND to profile particularly its work with children in the UK, and whether it was to do with it being easier to persuade people to like the idea of child Palestinians than it is your work with adult militants, and whether or not that was a motivating factor to fundraise here on the basis of the children's work.
Again, Lucy, you seem to have both.
For the sustainability, I mean, people live with the reality every day. Occupation is there around you. It's not that you're taken out of it and you go back to it. But it's a very slow process. It's building up support and affinity groups and community strength and volunteers within that community. It's slow. It takes years. But I think that it will eventually acquire its own momentum and therefore become more sustainable. That's what I hope. But I don't think people are away from the reality. You can't get away from it. In terms of MEND UK, it was really just as a charity in England. It seemed perhaps a clearer way of starting, if you like. Yeah. And also, the bulk of our work and the initial focus has also been with youth. And it's, in fact, I believe, the most important group to work with. As Hind pointed out, it's a very, very bottom-heavy society. It's incredibly important to work with the youth and give them hope. They are where the worst problems are and the most hopeless. So it's important.
So one more question from down here.
I just wanted to ask you about the difficulties you face. And I'm not thinking about money difficulties, because all NGOs have that, but I'm just thinking about promoting a non-violent alternative in a situation where people face daily violence and daily harassment, and it seems rather obvious that surely, as resistance, violence is legitimate. And so I wonder, how do you deal with that? But doesn't that become difficult? Aren't you criticized for being too weak, too moderate, and what sort of arguments do you make?
That's a fine question to end with. Actually, I personally don't have to deal with them so much, but the people that we work with in the West Bank, they have had to deal with them. For instance, in the town of Qalqilia, where we have a centre, first of all, in order to do the initial training about a year ago, we didn't do it in a rented space. We did it in the central offices of the Fatah movement to have their protection. And there were leaflets attacking them for this, describing them even as heretics, because democracy is seen as heresy in the town of Qalqilia, where Hamas recently won the elections. But and also in Tulkarim and in Nablus, the activists there have received leaflets that attack them. What they have done in every case is just address the people that wrote the leaflets. They've said, come and learn about what we're doing. And they're people of standing within their community. They're people who've spent time in prison. The Qalqilia was headed by the head of the local Fatah movement for a while. Now it's actually headed by a young woman, the office in Qalqilia. And they have invited people in and said, come and learn about what we're doing. And it's an odd sort of contradiction, because it sounds as if MEND is doing something political with its name of nonviolence and democracy. But in fact, a lot of what it's doing is more social. And this is what appeals to people and gives them hope. And people understand this. This is the sort of Gandhian broader sense of nonviolence as development of potential. And there aren't many other organizations that do it in this broad sense. There are very specific NGOs that work on one specific thing, for instance, with trauma rehabilitation and so on. But MEND is really much, much broader in the kind of hope that it's offering and the inclusiveness of its approach. And people like this. This is what its strength has been and why people stop objecting to it. So, yes, there have been difficulties. And perhaps the skepticism was initially difficult. But it's actually changed. It's become something quite mainstream. Everyone wants to be considered now a nonviolence NGO, which is all right.
Yes.
Well, just a very quick comment is that the PA policy actually calls for nonviolence. And hence called upon on all the factions to keep a period of quiet. It's certainly not a negation of the right of Palestinians to resist occupation, not at all. It's just viewed as a more appropriate strategy under the circumstances. And I want to assure you that the Palestinian society, as somebody earlier said, is not a violent society, and I think that's why it took so long for the 38-year-long occupation to really become visible as it did in the last few years. Or it's the passive attitude of people, really peaceful people, that allowed the occupation to deepen its roots in the society and to reach the situation that we are in today. Again, I think the factions see that as an important step forward to maintain the consensus on keeping a period of quiet. President Abbas is very keen to see that implemented so that we can at least move forward with the political process. Because finally, it's only moving forward, it's only based on reciprocity that both parties take steps that would allow us to move to a peaceful resolution and a more peaceful community.
So, well, myself, sitting up here on the platform, I've heard a lot this evening, which has more than confirmed what I felt when I was in Jerusalem, that MEND and organizations like it, but particularly MEND, are doing something a bit special. One of the reasons, one of the proofs about it, is that it's not easy and it's not universally welcomed, not universally understood. But by those who've been through the MEND schemes, projects, exercises, people like Dana have clearly felt a benefit, and society will in the future. It's not, and I think we've heard this very clearly, a substitute for a real peace. And it is, I think, do you remember watching Yes Minister in the 80s when people wanted to scare people off doing something? The civil servants would say, "Minister, this would be very courageous," to immediately frighten the minister into doing nothing. Well, you're clearly, you and people like you, you're not frightened into doing nothing. Doing nothing is the cop-out, and that is not what I expect of Palestinians and not what we're hearing about tonight. It's a great organization. I wish every success to MEND UK in doing what it can to support MEND Jerusalem, with the help from people, you and people like you in this room, and people who will read and hear about MEND as a result of this week's activities. Thank you all for coming and listening to us. Thank you very much, members of the panel, for all that you've done to explain about MEND and what it means. I know we didn't answer all your questions, but you now have a chance upstairs on the fifth floor over a cup of lemon squash or something to put the questions more directly. And I'm sure you're going to take good advantage of that. So thank you all, and see you upstairs. Thank you.
Very well done.